The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by Squarespace, the easiest solution to web design around. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial and use the offer code IGN for 10% off your order.
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond.
Beyond.
Beyond. Yes, Beyond is the name of this podcast. This is episode 391. This is your number one PlayStation podcast in the world, according to metrics and statistics. I'm your host, Max Scoville. Joining me is Marty Sliva.
What's going to happen? You can't get louder. That can't happen.
And then Brian Altano.
Oh. Hello. Hi, I'm Brian Altano. Rap, rap.
Yeah.
Oh, you're an adult.
So we got a lot of cool stuff to talk about today. Mm-hmm. It's going to be really hard not to talk about Star Wars the entire time because Brian and I were in Star Wars Celebration, and the weirdest thing happened while we were there. We turned into actual 10-year-olds for 3 days straight.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
That's really, really fun.
It seems unethical that they gave you a tattoo while you were an actual 10-year-old.
All the laws were no longer legal, and 10-year-olds were able to drink and get tattoos. Yeah. And it was a really good time. I want to talk about that. Obviously, we will tie it into Star Wars Battlefront. We got to see the Celebration exclusive presentation there. Wow, that's something worth being excited about, but also being sort of skeptical about at the same time, but also excited. Here's a fun thing for people who don't have a PlayStation Vita yet. You might get a chance to get a new PlayStation Vita, which is a brand new, different design that's sort of similar but kind of different.
Yeah, we'll get into that. It has some interesting components to it, too.
And then, of course, there's the big old just the I don't know how you consider this a leak. This is a massive – this is too big to call it a leak. This is like when a pipe bursts. Mass Effect 4 – someone asked was taking a survey, like one of those consumer surveys, and it was like, what would you want to see in Mass Effect 4? And then they outline the entire premise of the game.
It's like,
they don't give us that much information when we go preview games. This is like, this is the full synopsis, and I guess they had to kind of vote on what, you know, what they liked or didn't like.
Yeah.
Same exact thing happened with Dragon Age Inquisition, which originally was called Dragon Age 3 Inquisition, but I guess the focus group said that the number 3 made it seem, you know, less interesting to them or something.
Oh, focus groups.
Because the naming convention for that series has never worked. But there's that. And then, of course, there is Bethesda sending out their E3 conference invite.
It's coming soon. It's coming. It's already, we're already here. 8 weeks away.
That's so tiring.
That's spooky, right?
Yeah. So should we open up with some Star Wars?
Yeah, let's open up with Star Wars. I felt really bad because I had to sit at home and watch as you guys were having fun and making videos and just overall being in a place of happiness.
Sure.
Which we don't really get.
To be fair, the interesting thing was when you work a show like this, which I imagine a lot of our audience hasn't done, but I'm sure a lot of our audience has wanted to go to a convention or a celebration of sorts like this. There's like being in the room and being there, and then there's like coming back from home and hearing what everybody else saw. Mm-hmm. And they're two very different stories. And for us to – like I came back and I heard about the Billy Dee Williams panel, and I heard about the Carrie Fisher panel and how she kissed a guy. And like we missed all that because we weren't in lines for panels. We were running around the show kind of like capturing the energy of the people there. But I think that like, you know, there's pros and cons of working working something like this because you get to see everything. But on the flip side, people who were watching the live stream saw so much more. Mm-hmm. So I'm split. I'm jealous of them, but I'm also really, really happy we got to go.
Yeah, I mean, I know I was never into Disney as a kid. Like, I was never just a Disney kid. And I think the reason for that, it just kind of occurred to me, is I didn't have a VCR in my house until I was like 10 or 11.
Oh, so you only saw movies if they were on TV?
Basically, yeah, on TV or in theaters. And we had like broadcast, you know, TV. And they don't Disney never really shows stuff. They occasionally do. But like, you know, I saw a handful of Disney movies in theaters. But a lot of kids who are like, who do have that childhood nostalgia.
What year were you born?
86.
So yeah, so like late 80s, early 90s, and even like to an extent now, I think you see it more and more. Disney always talked about the vault.
Yeah, which right. was it always threatened like, you with the vault. Like, you better get it now, we're going to put it in the vault.
Yeah, and they would take stuff and sort of just like put it out for a little bit, and then it would disappear. And you can never turn on the TV and just see one of their films. It was really odd.
Yeah, because they protect their brands like that. But I mean, like, I know a lot of kids who are really crazy about Disney stuff, is they're like, yeah, I had... you know, Lady and the Tramp, and I watched that every day when I got home from school in like kindergarten or whatever. And I didn't have that, but it occurred to me that the first thing I got once we had a VCR was the Star Wars trilogy. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of my – well, now it is a Disney property. So that was kind of my Disney kid thing. And in that sense, I've also never been to a Disney theme park. So like I've never
– Right.
Like I've never – people are like, yeah, you go there and you go, you know, see Space Mountain and you see all the different – all your favorite characters. And I'm like, I never grasped that, but I think that going to Star Wars Celebration for me was kind of my Disneyland in a weird way.
Yeah, totally.
You get to surround yourself with all these people in costumes, and you get to see all these toys, and there's all these big things, like there's a, you know, AT-AT, and there's a Rancor, and you just get
a cantina.
Yeah, we get to hang out in the cantina. It was just really, really fun. And I kind of like, Brian, you and I were sitting in a hotel room watching the live stream and the trailer reveal on your phone. Mm-hmm. And after it finished, we just started like tearing up. I was full on like crying.
Yeah.
We just were like hugging each other. And we were kids again. We were so excited. And I thought that was kind of going to be like a weird, I thought it was going to be like a peak, you know? I thought it was going to be the high point. And it kind of happened all over again seeing Battlefront.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
So you guys got to see the presentation.
We went into the presentation and it was really... It was a little bit tragic because the way they set it up, they had this awesome huge booth that was set up like the Rebel briefing room from Return of the Jedi.
Oh, that's awesome.
So this huge kind of coliseum set up.
With the circular table in the center with the projector on it.
Yeah, you expect like Ackbar or Mon Mothma to walk in, but they had just a dude in cargo shorts.
They had enlisted the help of like some of the top people from Dolby to make this room specifically sound amazing. And it's very odd to me. I feel like they're going to take this room and they're going to bring it to other cons.
Yeah,
they have to.
Sort of like that Evolve monster that was just everywhere.
That you just kept seeing everywhere, right? Because it just felt like way too much fanfare to just keep something in this circular tube that you had to wait in line to get into. Like, a select group of people saw that, and you couldn't film it, and it didn't leak anywhere. Like, that was an experience they created for Star Wars Celebration.
I really respect that, too.
Yeah,
me too.
See, the thing is that I sort of tweeted something to this effect, but like... We do this for a living. Like, we go see video game presentations, and they're like, here's what we're working on. And more often than not, you have to be really skeptical because they're like, here's a vertical slice of the one part we finished that isn't broken, and here's something with no UI. And, like, I mean, I was in that presentation for Aliens Colonial Marines, and Randy Pitchford came out and was like, I'm a huge fan of this series. This is going to be a great time. Everyone get real excited. And we know how that turned out.
Yeah.
In this case, you know... dude from EA came out and he's like, hey, so here's what DICE is working on. They have been trying very hard to do everything really cool. Like, they've had access to Lucasfilm archives, like the Lucasfilm's vault, basically, but it's full of literal actual aliens and props and spaceships and stuff. And they like basically 3D scanned everything they wanted to use.
That's so cool.
And what's really neat here is that,
that's right.
Yeah, like they were going in and taking photos of an AT-ST from every angle possible.
The ones from the film like scanned and dropped into this game.
Yeah.
So like they basically described it as there's no better way to actually recreate this. Like they didn't painstakingly do it hand by hand with like from scratch. They actually took models and
it's going to look familiar to you if you've seen the movies a thousand times because this is the thing from the movie.
Exactly. Yeah. And here's what's really interesting about it is that like everyone loves the original trilogy, you know? There's one guy who's in the comments being like, I don't. Well, okay, that's great. Why are you listening to me? Go away. Anyway.
What's wrong with you?
Yeah. Trilogy's great. And it's all because of the practical effects are groundbreaking and incredible and wonderful, and they feel like a real place, you know?
Yeah.
The prequels are all like CG, and they kind of feel like you feel sort of detached. There's like people who are acting with like Jar Jar, and you're like, what are
it's lifeless.
This is all green screen, you know? What DICE did is they've got the Frostbite engine, which, debatably could probably create stuff that looks better than episode one. Like, that looks more realistic than the CG there, but it's interactive and it's functional, you know, arguably.
Because Hayden Christensen won't be in the game.
But, like, what they're doing is they are recreating real-life practical physical effects using CG in a game.
Yeah. Right.
And what I love about it is there's got to be there's kind of that impulse to try and make things look cooler or look more futuristic or, like, more – I don't think realistic is the right word, but to try and, like – to try and video game them, you know, to try and really amp it up. But what's great here is that they're totally aping the look of 1983 special effects.
Yep.
And when you shoot a guy in Battlefront, it doesn't have like a super realistic smoke effect and like a ricochet or something. It has corny ass 1983 sparks.
Yeah.
Which is so cool.
And it's great.
It is so cool.
So what? it's sort of like it. I spent the whole weekend looking for the perfect Scout Walker AT-ST model for my desk, right? And I ended up going home and buying one. But when I saw one appear on screen, because most of this demo takes place in Endor. I saw one appear on screen. You remember the first time you see one in the movie, and it looks like this like drunk baby, the way it sort of like waddles, it moves.
It's a chicken walker.
They totally nailed that. And I think Max is onto something. Like there was this sort of there was this cycle of sort of cynicism and redemption that I think has gone. It's permeated not just this game, but the entire franchise of Star Wars. And I feel like Celebration was a really good sort of coming out party for this game, as well as the new trailer for Force Awakens, because there's a thing we love, and then there's the bad side of it. Like, we used to love Star Wars video games, but we know that, like, DICE made some bad decisions with some games in the past. Mm-hmm. And some people are mad about the Battlefield franchise and the way things turned out. And people were mad about the prequels, and now they're in new hands, and everything's in new hands, and everything's sort of working at the same time, and they're all using this excuse to kind of look back and focus on practical effects. So there's this kind of redemption that's happening with the films, and it's happening with the games at the same time.
Yeah.
And I think it was a good time to see all that together, because all of that energy is – it's rubbing off on people, right?
Yeah.
And it's rubbing off on each other. The people who are working on the films are obviously collaborating with the people working on the games, and the people working on the games are bringing it to the audiences who are being like – I get this now. I'm excited again. Yeah. You know?
And this is our first glimpse at what, I mean, years ago when Disney acquired Lucas, and then when we found out EA was sort of going to be the stakeholder of the Star Wars games going forward.
Yeah.
This is the first we've seen of that.
Yes. Now, I want to kind of address this, and I think a lot of people are, with good reason, skeptical of EA.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they got voted the worst company in the world twice in a row. You know?
Somehow that they keep beating Comcast. Yeah. I don't understand. Has no one ever called Comcast? Do you have any idea how bad that is?
Comcast gave me someone else's account by accident. They like forgot. It's an account. It's a digital thing. It should not be a physical thing that you can hand over. But they forgot to erase someone else's personal information.
That's
like one of the most Sith Lord things you could do.
Yeah. I mean, it was literally the premise of Brazil, but with Comcast. Anyway, so EA has a 10-year license to rent the Star Wars money printing machine.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to give it back in 10 years, but maybe they don't have to if they do good things with it.
Yeah.
You know, like Star Wars stuff is going to sell regardless. Mm-hmm. Like it's going to do okay. But I think that kind of LucasArts for a while was kind of just, they weren't really, you know, cranking out the right kind of stuff. They weren't making hits, you know? And I think that EA is fully capable of like making stuff that's really good, but maybe this is the fire that has to be lit under their ass for them to do it right.
Totally.
Like, because I mean, Disney, say what you will about them and they're over merchandising or the whatever it is, they do take care of their own brands. Like they don't kind of, you know, they did do those direct to video things for a while.
Yeah,
like Lion King 1.5. The story I heard is that John Lasseter, who's now like one of the head dudes there, basically went in and was like, why are you making a CG movie about Tinkerbell and her friends? This is gross. This is something they're going to sell at Walgreens in 6 months for $7.
Yeah, or
stop
now.
This. Yeah, pretty much. So, you know, I think that with Star Wars, it seems like they're really trying to just really just kind of preserve it, you know, like not in the way where you're, you know, where you go back and add stuff in CG, but really just kind of just keep that thing that made it special in the first place looking good.
So two of the biggest criticisms I've heard going in and sort of still hovering around this are, number one, everyone knows, there's no single player.
Yes.
And that That hurts, especially for someone like me. And I know Max, we always talk about this on the show, and you do too, about how like I really prefer an experience like that. And I think you even said on the show a couple weeks ago that like Star Wars to you is about that, immersing yourself into that world, and you lose that when there's some 5-year-old kid yelling at his mother through 100%. His headset.
Yeah, totally.
So that stings, right? And I'm a guy that loves single-player campaigns, so that kind of hurts to see that go away. And number two, that there's no space battles, or at least not yet.
Yeah.
And maybe there will be. But after seeing this demo, me, someone who's like, I'm not really like a Call of Duty, run around in circles, shoot people kind of guy, after seeing the first steps of walking on Endor – with
so
your squad.
It was gameplay. It wasn't like the trailer that got released.
It was gameplay.
The trailer was kind of reflective of what was going on. But that was still like very, very polished.
Totally.
The actual demo we saw was pre-alpha in-engine gameplay running on a PS4.
Okay. After seeing the leaves on the ground and the ferns everywhere the way things just kind of bend and snap when things are running over them, the scope of watching like you're in a small battle or you're just kind of sneaking around. I mean, we might as well describe the demo straight up. Yeah. You're in a small demo. You're sneaking around with your squad. You're kind of like, do you hear something? What's going on? And all of a sudden, it's like, speeder goes by, trooper on it, and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
So war opens up, and now they're shooting at you. You're fighting with them. You hear something in the distance, and it's AT-ST, and he's just walking towards you. From there, you look up, and like 5 X-Wings shoot over the whole field, and you're like, this is getting bigger. You look up, there's the Ewok villages, like perfectly recreated. You can run up in them. Neenum shows up, and he's got a jetpack. Like, it's awesome. Yeah. And all of a sudden, there's the AT-AT walker in the distance. And he just like comes in. Every step he takes is like they're shooting at his head. It's just not working. And they fire up, basically launch like some sort of thermal blaster into him, nuke him, and then take him down. And then from there they run into this bunker, open up the front doors. Your trooper runs around the corner. He thinks he's safe, and you hear the iconic breathing of Darth Vader. He's standing there. You start firing at him like crazy. He dodges every single one with his lightsaber, and then kills you.
Yes,
and it ends.
Best.
And they're like, "Yep, playable Darth Vader."
Yeah.
So basically, you can switch between third person and first person anytime throughout anything. It's team based, and I'm sure there'll be like a number of different kind of matches that can unfold within that.
Sure. Yeah.
And I'm sitting there going like, yeah, there's no single player, but I'm gonna play this game like it is.
Yeah.
Like just because there isn't like here's the story, like I'm on Endor, that's the story.
You know what?
Like,
you know what it kind of reminded me of? Destiny, but way prettier and way bigger and way louder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Destiny also kind of really only has multiplayer.
Yeah.
Like Destiny doesn't have a story. Star Wars has a story.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the thing is that it seemed like they're really not. I mean, Destiny also is extremely derivative of Star Wars.
Yeah.
Like it is Boba Fett and General Grievous riding around on speeder bikes together. Like that's kind of the premise of the game.
Yeah.
Like, if they manage to do something like that, but that does have like little bits of like, maybe not story or exact campaign, but like context.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The idea that you're playing in the same place together. If it's if it's kind of like an MMO sandbox on Endor.
Yeah.
I don't really hate that. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know how it's going to work exactly.
I think it'll be more like, you know, 5-on-5 match-based stuff. But like you were saying, like we're both saying, it's basically, you know, Destiny had to invent its own story. And whether or not you like it, that's on them. Titanfall was like, we have a single-player mode, right? But it's like, not really.
It was like a tutorial.
Because you never cared about any of those characters on a personal level. But like, Star Wars has that already. So even when I'm just sitting there watching the game, there's a story. I know the story because I've seen the.
You're bringing in like your own history with these characters in this world.
Yeah, which is kind of cheating, but still, so what? You know, like it looks beautiful, and like if I was playing Titanfall, and all of a sudden halfway through a bunker opened up, and a guy showed up, and he had like this guy with a black garbage bag on his head, and he had a light sword, and he started fighting me. I'd be like, who the hell is this guy?
Yeah.
But in Star Wars, I'm like, that's Darth Vader.
Yeah.
I know him.
Yeah.
I know how horrible he is. I know what he's capable of, and now he's trying to kill me.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
You know?
One thing they also said is that they said playable Darth Vader. It sounds like it's going to be similar to how Battlefront's done it before, where there've been kind of like pickups of you become like, oh, you could be Yoda for 10 minutes or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know how this is going to work out exactly, but they said that two people can be basically hero villain characters on the same map, and then they go head to head and it gets interesting.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that
could be super
could
interesting.
Be,
yeah,
really
yeah.
Cool. I mean, also, like, if they manage to do something where it's like, in terms of, cooperative multiplayer structure, and they kind of ape Destiny a little bit, and then they throw in a little bit of Titanfall with the AT-STs and AT-ATs, and then just got like the kind of depth of the world that's capable with like Frostbite.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm pretty into that. You know,
totally.
I'm still really skeptical, just because it is a game that they're trying to get done for a very, very tight deadline, which is November 17th, which is pretty ballsy, but.
And I mean, they've announced you have the four planets at launch. Mm-hmm. It's Hoth, Endor, Tatooine, and Jakku's coming.
Oh, that's
as
the
DLC.
I like how you say it like with a French Jakku.
That's how they've been saying it. I watch those live streams.
All right,
Jakku.
Fine.
I don't know.
What's Sollust? You know what's
Sollust is the icy lava planet that we've seen. I believe like it's on the Battlefront art. It's like. It's like, what if there's ice? But basically, it's Iceland, you know?
Yeah.
That's a jerk planet.
So, like, I'm kind of okay with them selling planets down the line. Of sort of like, it's $12 and you get to go on this, like,
here's Cloud
beautifully
City.
Recreated here's Bespin or whatever. Or, like, mm-hmm. here's Coruscant, here's Dagobah. Although, like, Dagobah's going to be weird because it's just.
What about
so
that garbage
corrupt.
Planet that IG-88 hangs out at? In
Ord Mantell?
Yeah.
I'm into that.
That planet was dumb.
Yeah. I see. The thing is, EA does the worst stuff with DLC. Like, there's that just inherent sense of like buyer's remorse. DLC is the coolest idea. It is the best idea in theory, but in practice, it just gets kicked around left and right.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, you want to spend $90 on 50 DOA bikinis? And it's like, that's 1.5 times the cost of the game itself. What's wrong with you? Why would you do that? You know?
Yeah, like I like the idea of that being able to piecemeal pick and choose what I want from this. And if they go into some planet, like they go to that dumb Gungan underwater temple or whatever, I'm gonna be like, nah. But if they're like, yeah, we're going to Jabba's palace, then I want in. You know, I want to fight all over Jabba's palace. Also, I want to run around that place because I've only seen a few rooms and it looks awesome.
Also, there's another thing is one of the things – like EA has had a really bad track record with trying to ship games at a certain point and shipping broken games. How do we feel if basically the reason that we're getting like four planets and one more to come is that they're going to be kind of trickling them out and that buying the game at launch, the price of admission – gets you access to all that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, this is something that, I mean, I like the way that GTA did it, where, like, you get the full thing for free, but hang out a minute, you know? Like, here's the thing we've got ready for launch.
I think
it in the wild. And
I think the counter argument there is that GTA had, like, a full-fledged single-player game at the jump.
That's a good answer.
So, I don't know. I mean, I've been saying for years I kind of want to see – I'm okay with – I'd love to see a Call of Duty one year that's, like – $40 for multiplayer, $20 for single player. But they'll never do that because they can sell $60 both to people who only play one, you know? Because I know a lot of people only play one. It's multiplayer. But me, I actually prefer – I'd rather run through a Call of Duty campaign every year. Mm-hmm. So if $20 later, they can piece this out. Like, this sucks because it sounds like we're justifying bad business. But we're also like – we're tasked with covering the video game industry during a time where this is commonplace. Mm-hmm. Like EA, it used to be they were the easiest punching bag when it came to DLC, but like Ubisoft made some terrible decisions with Assassin's Creed DLC last year. You know, like just microtransactions out the ass.
You know
can
how
I say that? Yeah. And then you know, there's a lot of other companies that do it. I know, like Nintendo. Even I love them. I play Smash Brothers like crazy. They just gave me Mewtwo for free because I registered both copies of the game. On the same day, they said, buy skins for your Mii character for 75 cents each or $1.15 for both. And I'm just kind of like, everyone's doing this now. Like, everyone's doing this now. So we have to figure out a way – we have to figure out the right way to do it and the right way to cover it and the right way to say this is acceptable. And right now, currently, I'm okay with what they're doing based on what I've seen so far.
Yeah.
I'm okay with paying $60 based on what I've seen so far. Now, the Space Battles thing, I could see why that's a problem.
Yeah.
Especially if someone like me who's like a longtime Rogue Squadron fan, like I used to play the crap out of those games on GameCube. I love the fact that you could go on Hoth and you could also go on an asteroid field. Like if we could do that in GameCube, why can't we do that now? But I have a feeling something like that is happening and it's coming. And
And whether it's DLC or whether it's – I don't know if this game becomes annualized or every other year or if that's something that ties into Rogue One, which is next year, which is obviously a space battle.
And that was the interesting thing. Like this feels so – it feels so well designed on the ground right now. Like this actually does feel like a game that is – it's, you know, it's about – It's about getting into cover. It's about being in squads. It's about being on foot, running around, jumping into this like shield dome thing, which is really dope that like you can hide out in, having jetpacking up and hitting somebody. To strip all of that away and go into the sky, I mean, I think that would require just – it's almost a separate game than what they're building right now.
Yeah.
But of course, I'd love to see it.
Yeah. I think that I think that the fact that they're just calling it Star Wars Battlefront and not Star Wars Battlefront 3 –
yeah,
I mean, this is clearly something new. You know, they want to make this feel really like a new thing. But also, what if Star Wars Battlefront is just the banner that every little like DLC drop or expansion gets put under? You know, I mean, like, I think that there's a model out there that kind of got used for I mean, like the expansion pack model, which you know, we did get like that with StarCraft 2. Still, they're really the only guys who I feel like.
Or you don't have World of Warcraft 2,
right?
Yeah.
I think it could be very much something like that. But
I'll add We saw this game running on PlayStation 4.
That's what they said.
That's what they said. Hopefully we can believe them. There wasn't just like a giant PC in the background. Yeah. And it kind of gave me that moment I had playing Uncharted 3 when you're in the desert, when you're like, I can control this.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that part when you're playing a game that looks so good where the character's just standing there and you're like, this is a cutscene, right? And it's like, I can move him.
Yeah.
I had that with the moment they showed Endor where it was kind of like, this is a cutscene. Oh, he's looking around. Oh, he's signaling to.
Yeah. And then the gun comes out. When the gun came out, everyone just like cheered. Oh yeah, and third person's there too.
Yeah.
Swapping out a third person and first. So there's. I know that's one thing people were worried about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we still have questions, but. Yeah.
We'll have more on this. Obviously, probably at E3. Probably about.
No matter what they come out with, it still looks pretty. Whether or not it plays well, or we want to play it, is a different story entirely. Yeah. But you know,
As of right now, it's the most beautiful Endor simulator I've ever seen.
Yep,
if it ends up being more than that, I'll be happy.
All right, on to the next one. A new Vita has been trademarked in Japan. It is basically the same as the 2000 model. Call this one the 3000 model for the hell of it, whatever.
Yep.
It seems like the big addition here is that they have added an HDMI port.
Yeah.
Which means that your PS4 could soon be a Wii U.
Yeah, that's what's really interesting is you were thinking that way.
Yeah.
Oh, weird. I was thinking the other way.
What's the other way?
I was thinking of sending my signal to my TV.
That's what I was thinking.
Not taking my TV signal to my Vita. That's interesting, too.
I mean, it goes either way.
Yeah, it goes either way. I mean, so that's going to be the weird – this sort of seems – if it is sending the signal to the TV, then it's going to be like a tethered PlayStation TV. This thing's going to be tethered to your TV.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, in theory, you could, I think through Bluetooth, you could use a PS3 or PS4 controller to control your Vita game on the TV.
Yes. Yeah.
That would make some sense.
So.
You've got a little touchpad there.
Yeah.
I like the idea of all that coming together.
Yeah. So
Have you tried.
There's so much cross-buy.
Have you guys tried playing like games on remote play recently? Like, I tried Bloodborne.
Yeah.
And it. Because they map the second shoulder pads are always mapped to the touch buttons on the back. It's just like for a game like that, you can get it to work. You can work around it, and if you're really good, you're awesome.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of a new Vita with a second pair of trigger because that would solve that immediately.
Is like it's in theory it's these like blueprints sort of like schematics and it does look like there's a second pair of triggers, so you'd have an L1 and L2, R1 and an R2.
Okay, well that would make it all pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean that would be great. That would sort of be because we talked about recently about like what's the future of the Vita.
Yeah,
and I feel like instead of a Vita 2, like I don't look at my Vita. I'm like, man, I wish this was more powerful. I'm like, no, I'm fine with what you are as a piece of hardware.
Yeah,
like but. I mean, this stuff all sounds great. You know, second pair of triggers, and especially if they can sort of get their act together with either PlayStation Now or just better downloadable games. Like, if I could download all of these PS2 games onto my Vita, that'd be awesome to roll around with.
I don't even think this is something they would just call the Vita 2 or anything like that. I really feel like Nintendo's caught onto it and Sony's caught onto it that we are at you have to follow the Apple model now, which is basically like put out. Sort of marginally or somewhat more revised systems every year or so. You know, like Nintendo just put out the new Nintendo 3DS. It added a nub and second shoulder buttons and slightly more processing power. But outside of that, and like Amiibo support. But outside of that, it wasn't really like – it wasn't the Game Boy to the Game Boy Color or the Game Boy Advance to the DS. It wasn't a big leap like that. But I don't think we're going to see stuff like that anymore. I think it's going – like – sort of like minor refinements are a good thing. Yep. And that's kind of what the Vita needs. And I know it goes against what I said a couple weeks ago, which is I want to see a Vita that's kind of more family friendly, like mm-hmm. the clamshell design and stuff like that. But I mean, if they are going to double down with their design, making it better and making it feel more like a PS4 controller can't hurt.
Yeah. And the Vita is sort of more alive and well and vibrant in Japan than it is in the States.
Yeah.
Like, I actually saw people playing it when I was there earlier in the year. Saw people.
Well, it's because they got those cool, skinny, colorful ones that are adorable.
Yeah, where are skinny, colorful ones?
Well, they might be on the way.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm interested to see come E3 how much of the PS4 or the Sony press conference is, you know, is devoted to Vita, like, especially when,
I think we kind of don't really, they don't really do that so much.
Yeah. I mean, even
but then
like,
they always have a ton on the show floor.
Yeah.
There's
exactly.
always like a bunch out there. Yeah. And they're like, here's the stuff that's going to be trickling out.
I remember that
next.
Last year there was like 100-something Vita games on the show floor.
Yeah. But you wouldn't have known that if you would have watched the conference. Because the conference was, you know, it was torn between the big AAA stuff and then, sort of third party, bonds they've created, and then indie games. And now we're going to have those, and we're also going to have probably Morpheus VR stuff as well.
Yeah.
So it's a crowded conference. So, yeah, I don't know. A lot of people are wondering, like, hey, are we going to get that Infamous game for Vita? Are we going to get that new God of War for Vita? And I'm like, I don't know I mean, if that's their game anymore. I don't know if that's what Sony's planning on doing.
I think that making it so that they make a game that works on PS4 and you plug an HDMI port into it, and then you can just basically just have a long cord and sit on your couch. And
go ahead.
I was going to say, the closer they get to that cross-buy ecosystem of sort of like, I bought this game, like I bought Metal Gear Solid, the PS1 downloadable file, mm-hmm. and I can play it everywhere. Yep. I bought this and I can play it everywhere. Yep. I bought a new PS, I bought Bloodborne and I'm going to play it on my Vita in the car. Like, I don't know how well that's going to work.
Yeah.
If ever, but I mean, I feel like that's happening in our life, in our lifetime. So this is one step closer to that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And it's great. Every time I have a game that's cross by cross save, I'm like, this is what everyone needs to be looking at.
Yeah.
Like when I'm reviewing Broken Age and mm-hmm. like the complete version on PS4, loaded it up, played like an hour or two, took my Vita and picked up right where I left off. And I'm like, this is perfect. Titanfall's the same way. This is exactly what I want from these
devices.
That is
awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was what I always – I think Guacamelee was the first game that did it for me. Mm-hmm. Where I was just like, there's no resistance. There's no pushback.
Yeah.
You know, it's not even – it's easier than transferring music from a computer to my phone. Like, that's kind of –
Yeah.
It's sad, right?
It really is.
It's like you bought a book. You can read your book at home. You can read your book at the coffee shop. You can read your book on vacation. You can read your book wherever you want. Mm-hmm. It's your book. And I kind of like that idea. It's like you bought your game. As long as you own our things, you could play your game wherever you want.
Yes. It's one of those cool things that like me and my friends and everyone pitched when we were like 7.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's just like, man, imagine you could play Metal Gear at school and go home and just – and like have – you already beat that boss. And the game knows. It just knows.
Yeah.
It just knows. It just knows. There's a little man inside that – yeah, like I really hope that happens. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see more stuff like that.
Yeah, big fan of that.
Excuse me just one moment while we take a brief word from our sponsor. Whether you guys are trying to create a blog, website, or an online store, Squarespace is the easiest solution. With an easy-to-use interface, gorgeous templates, and handy 24/7 customer service from actual human beings, Squarespace is the smartest and simplest way to stake your claim to your own little corner of the internet. Are you trying to break into the games industry? Because Squarespace can be used to make a great-looking portfolio, whether you're an aspiring developer or member of the media. Head over to squarespace.com for a free trial today and use the offer code IGN at checkout to get 10% off your order. Squarespace, build it beautiful! Mass Effect 4 is a game that will happen someday.
What did you? You
Christopher Walken's here.
There's
list of papers here.
There's the big Reddit. I like how this is all from a survey. Like, what the hell kind of a survey?
This
just gives us much information.
This is literally, 3.5 pages of information. What do we learn here? The next Mass Effect context. Next Mass Effect takes place in the Helios Cluster. It's a cluster of hundreds of solar systems in the Andromeda Gap. Okay. Apparently, it's 4 times the size of Mass Effect 3.
That's a large video game.
There's some mean guys and some space.
Mm-hmm.
You have to collect resources to fuel your growth. The big takeaway here is that it sounds a lot like Mass Effect in terms of like, oh, you need to get resources. You're going to upgrade your stuff. You're going to have a squad you've got to manage. But the difference is they have totally destroyed the – I mean, spoiler alert, they totally destroyed the Mass Effect relay. So basically it's kind of a – it sounds like it could be sort of post-apocalyptic but in space.
Yeah.
I mean, basically you're rebuilding. You're working as – it is suddenly –
a bold new frontier, which mm-hmm. is really cool. And I'm really drawn to that idea. And that's something that Mass Effect never did for me. I never really liked that sense of just, hey, a bunch of stuff's already in place here. You know, if they make it like kind of a weird, like, I mean, if they make it a little Star Warsy and it's kind of a used future where there's like people are kind of scrappy and they're sort of trying to get by.
Totally.
But it's there's a multiplayer horde mode. That's not really new. Active strike team missions.
One of the things I really like from here is I like the idea that it seems to be pulling a little bit from Dragon Age Inquisition, where it seems like it's very much about sort of building your universe and sort of making things your own. And so you know, as you're exploring these planets, you're meeting new people, you're developing new settlements, and you're creating this universe and you're like putting your thumbprint on it, which I really like.
I like that a lot. Also, I think the coolest thing they could do, and Dragon Age Inquisition did not do this at all because they were trying to half do the kind of like, let's start fresh, kind of like you're kind of a new character, but like it's still like assuming that you know some stuff about the universe. Like there's definitely parts where they didn't really try to explain much to you. I really hope that they can just treat this like a brand new game.
Yeah,
and if they can just introduce players, like, guess what's happened since the like. Here's what's happened since the last game, but don't assume that everyone knows what a Krogan is, you know? Introduce a Krogan for the first time, like, holy crap, that's a big Gila monster, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you meet him and he's a jerk and you're like, oh, they're like a warlike race. That's cool. Yeah, I'm into that. And the thing is that the Mass Effect games are always so, like, they're so loaded with information. There's so much context and so much stuff there to kind of unpack. And I really respect that, but the means in which you're kind of, in which you eat it, it's not, or you don't eat it, but the way it kind of, like, it is given to you, it's very much like here's a pile of stuff, you know. You like, you talk to somebody for 5 minutes and it's like you unlocked 5 new codexes, and it feels like a high school history textbook versus versus like a world that you're being brought into. I mean, I was watching Empire Strikes Back last night, surprise, and there's that part in there where Luke gets to Cloud City, and there's just this stretch of silence where he's just kind of going through it, you know,
just like, what the hell is this place?
And it's that kind of show don't tell mentality, which is one of the kind of the, you know, cardinal rules of cinema, I guess, which I don't think is often enough used in video games, you know?
No.
Like, they just beat you over the head with exposition as opposed to being like, figure some stuff out for yourself, and then, you know, we'll have a little thing in your menu that you can look at if you need to read up. But
I think people would be way less prone to skip cutscenes and story stuff if story wasn't so much story, like, and then I explain everything to you, or it's two people talking and one of them's walking away from the other because it's a video game. I really like that, the notion of just sort of being like, here's this thing, here's this area, like, let it teach you what you want to take from it, rather than just having to get beaten over the head with a story.
Do you think I mean, we keep calling it Mass Effect 4. Do you think that's what it's going to be called?
I really doubt it.
No.
They dropped the 3 from Inquisition. I think that they really want to separate. Like, that's the big problem, and it's kind of amazing that Assassin's Creed has managed to. I mean, they've dropped numbers too.
Yeah.
Guess what else has dropped numbers is
Star Wars
and Marvel, because that's the thing, is the higher the number is, the more new people you're scaring off.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think they're going to call it, you know, probably Mass Effect
something.
Mass Effect Context.
Yeah. That numbering thing somehow still flies in the Fast and the Furious franchise for some reason. That movie made billions of dollars.
Well, even though they keep changing.
I know.
Like, nothing else in the convention makes any sense.
To me, the Fast and the Furious movies are like if you have like a DVD series, but like the labels are like slightly off. There's like the one, there's always a picture. There's one of the Harry Potter movies on DVD. Like the title is like lower than the other ones. And so like you go across in your collection.
Oh, damn it.
Yeah.
An active affront to people who notice that kind of stuff.
Yes. Interesting. Yeah. I'm assuming. I mean, do you think again E3? Like, this is definitely not a fall game. Like, this is not.
No, I think if it is, if it does get anything at E3, it'll be a teaser trailer. People love those.
Yeah.
But I don't think we'll get anything this year.
Yeah, because it was one of the games.
I could see a teaser trailer.
We had that weird last year at EA's press conference. It was the like behind the scenes docs on a lot of those
games.
That
was so awful.
Mass had one.
Horrible. It was so
Star Wars
awful.
Had one. Yeah. Mirror's Edge had one.
Max and I were ranting about this the other day.
It's
make the thing and then tell us how it's made.
Yeah.
Don't tell us how it's like. If you went to a restaurant and the chef came out and was like, so I'm going to describe to you what the food is like before you, and then you went back and you had to wait several hours for it to come out of the kitchen. You're like, well, that was really kind of insulting. You know?
Here's the photos. Here's some photos of this cow, very young, before it became your burger. And you're like, I don't care.
Yeah. I love concept art so much, but it makes me just livid when it's used as a marketing material because it's like maybe you're not even going to deliver on that front. Like, it's just show it after the fact. And you're like, oh man.
I was thinking about this stuff with Star Wars. Like, I can't wait until the new one comes out and the new film comes out. And I go, and if I fall in love with it, like I think I will, which I know I will, I'll go and I buy all the art books for it. And I'm like, these are all the character designs they didn't use yet. But that always felt like, especially at E3, E3 is like the place where you want to be like, so is this a new Mass Effect game? And they're just like, there's plenty of stories to be told in the Mass Effect universe. I mean, some of them we've told before, and others will be told by other people sometimes.
Using concept art and developer diaries to sell your game or to build hype for it is like putting baby pictures on your OkCupid profile.
Yeah.
This is wrong. Why would you ever think that is a good thing?
Yeah, yeah.
Are we hooking up? No, this is the time when I didn't even know what hooking up was. But what a
In high school, I won several awards, and it was very exciting for me. My parents love me. Here are pictures of my parents, too. You can look at them. It's like, what do you look like? Yeah. Who are you? What do you actually enjoy?
Who's this, like, bewildered entrepreneur you guys have created?
I don't know. I don't know. We were doing that voice all weekend. So it's definitely happening. It's definitely coming. If last year didn't tip us off with their 10-minute long documentary about what it's like to imagine space planets.
I'm going to make a prediction.
What's
up? I'm going to make a big old prediction.
There we go.
That they are going to have behind closed doors demos at PAX Prime.
Whoa.
That's a pretty specific prediction.
That is very specific.
But
when
I've
is
noticed
that?
September.
August.
Yeah. All right.
I've noticed that publishers and studios frequently kind of develop patterns in terms of how they market stuff and how they present stuff. I saw Dragon Age Inquisition at PAX Prime, not the last one, but 2012, I think.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And they were like, hey, this isn't done yet. You know, it says like pre-alpha all over it.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, they were showing off behind closed doors Shadow Realms, which has since been canned.
That was not a real video.
No. They were like, here's what we got so far. Yeah. And I don't know if they just do that as kind of like they show it to some fans and just they show it to some. I don't think they show Dragon Age Inquisition to anybody, but I mean, it was press events and stuff. And I think that
could make sense because. If the game isn't huge at E3, it might be big at Gamescom, which is like a couple weeks before PAX, and that's sort of the time that makes sense.
I just hope it's something more than a logo. Anyone can make a logo.
When it says logo subject to change at the bottom, like, why did you?
It's just a logo.
And it's just like, this might not be the actual
underneath
logo.
Underneath, it's like, even this ain't real. Sucker. I hate that. Show me something, you know?
If you want to make a Mass Effect logo at home, you can use the font Slider. And then put a simple light to blue, like blue gradient, blue to white, and just put that on
Are
there.
Are these real?
A little bit of a bevel boss.
Should I be taking notes? A
there
bevel
you go.
Boss.
I've made so many goddamn thumbnails with the Mass Effect logo in it. All right. So then, of course, we've got Bethesda's E3 press conference invite, which features a bunch of Bethesda characters.
Really cool invite, by the way.
Of Dolby Theater.
You don't really see that a lot. That's usually that sort of fanfare is reserved for Christmas cards. Publishers and devs always send out like really cool Christmas cards in the year. Yeah. And it's always like Rare always has a good one where it's just like, maybe like they tease Killer Instinct for like 3 years in their Christmas cards, just being like, Fulgore's sitting by the fire and Banjo-Kazooie's hanging out. You're like, hey, you're making a new game?
Also, wouldn't Fulgore murder that bear?
Angry. I mean, that's not canon at all.
No.
Maybe he is. Maybe he's cool. But yeah, this is cool. It's a shot of a theater with a whole bunch of chairs in it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's these kind of like, this seat is reserved for.
Yeah.
And it's all of the characters from their games, but no one from Fallout.
Yeah. Which...
That's not a huge surprise.
Yeah,
Doom Cyber Demon.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I mean, that's the weird. Like we keep thinking. So this is Bethesda's first conference ever. It's leading off E3. It's 6:30 p.m. on Sunday, so it's starting E3 a day earlier than it ever has before.
Like, let's see. We know we're getting ESO. ESO comes out like. That comes to consoles like either right before or right after E3.
Yeah, that's right.
They're gonna be hitting hard with that in that like. It's available now, you know.
Where it's like, thing. No, we care about what's coming soon.
We can pretty much guarantee we're getting something new Wolfenstein.
I mean, we know that there's the zombie DLC.
Yeah.
That'll be helpful.
There's a standalone game. It's called, like, the First Order?
I thought that was a Star Wars.
I'm trying to drive
The First Order is what the name
order,
of the bad
the Old Order?
The Blood Order?
The Blood Order? The Old Blood.
Old Blood.
There you go.
The Old Blood.
Naming conventions.
Old Nazi Blood.
Yeah, and then, so that explains, you know.
We know there's a new Doom.
Yeah,
in
yeah,
some I mean, capacity.
Which people a lot saw. Of us have.
Are we?
Yeah, Vince saw, but it was only at QuakeCon.
He did what we did, where we had to come back and explain it to a room full of people. And he's like, there's demons and there's blunts and there's
guys,
a gun.
Yeah. Off a guy's butt and so, Evil, out the I would, window. And...
I'm going to make a bet that Evil Within 2 will be announced.
Really?
Yeah totally. I really think so.
You think so? Did that do well? Did
it sold well.
Yeah, it sold well.
It definitely sold well.
Yeah.
And the DLC did okay. I mean, it could just be another DLC thing, but I have a feeling they're going to be like, this is happening. Yeah. It's not happening for a while, but it's happening.
Yeah.
Now, the Dishonored one is interesting, too.
Yeah. I was going to say, that would be... Seeing new stuff from all of these games, especially Doom, but then getting Dishonored 2 would be probably a big enough show for them.
Yeah,
If they don't say something about Fallout, they're going to piss people off.
Yeah, I mean, those are the three things I think they have to hit on are show Doom,
mm-hmm.
say something about Dishonored 2 that we assume is what Arkane in Texas is working on.
Yeah.
There's also Arkane in Lyon.
There's also Prey 2, maybe.
There's also Prey 2 if that still exists.
About.
But I mean, I think them not including anything Fallout on this card. Is like a direct like.
I think they like to mess with Fallout fans.
They're
I think they so really lovely. Actually enjoy it. Pete Hines, who's like the head of marketing for Bethesda, I love him. He's like this. He just loves sports. Like he's like a total jock, and he's like running this. Like he's running the PR stuff for like one of the nerdier studios publishers. And you can get like you can be the first to know about some of the coolest announcements. Like I think he announced like he'll tease images out, like he'll put images out, and people are always like, "Is it Fallout? Is it Fallout?" But to follow him, you also have to follow every other like hockey and soccer update possible.
Yep.
So it's just like a barrage of like sports stuff, and then it'll be like, "Here's an image from Dishonored," seen that before. Where did that come from? Yeah. And it's like,
I love that.
It's weird to think that there was an era. I think it was when I started working here. A couple years ago, where there was Fallout stuff constantly.
Yeah.
Like all the time. We just got DLC all the time. Colin Moriarty, who used to host his show, obviously, he wrote the guide for Fallout 4.
And it was like, or for 3.
For 3, I'm sorry. Yeah. And he sat, it was funny because he sat next to me, and for a year straight, I heard the music from that game. And I heard him fighting and shooting monsters and stuff like that. And he wrote the guide. Our wiki guide for that game is a book. It is a damn
hundreds
novel.
Of thousands of words.
It's like a 20,000 page book about how to kill radiated mutants in Fallout. It's insane. Like the fact that that man didn't snap or anything is a testament to how patient he is.
How do we know he didn't?
Maybe he did. He might have quietly.
Colin?
I'm sure.
He hit Portillo.
No, it's a... That is really incredible. That game is – I've played that game – I think I did like 2.5 playthroughs at that, which is like I don't usually replay games in their entirety, but I definitely was like, I'm going to get back in there. And there was always a sense of like, there's stuff I haven't seen over here.
Have I ever told you this story on the show? I guess I haven't. About how I played that game like a homeless guy?
No.
Basically,
you play that game like
– if you play that game without knowing what you're doing, you basically just – you bypass most of the towns because you don't have any money and you can't do anything. And you just end up in sewers and then walking to like the downtown DC area. And you pick up everything. You get addicted to drugs. And I got to like halfway through the game before I had a gun that could kill anyone. I just ran from everything and just like picked up coins and scraps and got addicted to everything.
Were you enjoying this?
I was just eating garbage off the floor and picking up like old radiated spoons and stuff like that. And I was fighting one of those guys who were up on one of the towers, like the really heavy gunners, and he slipped and fell and died. And I got his gun, which is like a sort of like halfway through the game type of gun.
Yeah, yeah.
And I ran out in the countryside addicted to drugs like, and shot everybody out. And then I died, and I was like, okay, that was a wrong way to play this, but that's awesome that they let me do that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that's a game that lets you totally experiment and get weird. I talked about killing that whole family of people in Vampire Town or whatever. It's I love that. I really hope that they're not going to break that, you know?
Yep.
Like Skyrim was the same way, where you can kind of just get weird, you know?
Yeah.
You're just this horrible screaming man who runs around in fur underwear.
Yeah.
Like.
But we got Fallout 3, and then we got a bunch of different DLCs, and it seemed like that would never stop. And then it did for long enough for us to be like, where the hell is it?
So
I hope this is a sign that something's happening.
Love That's it. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
We got a lovely email.
Yeah,
email. This email says, Dear Beyonders.
Beyond.
That's us.
Sorry about the Secret Wars. First of all, I want to say I love the new show, and it makes traveling to college for over 1.5 hours bearable. Thank you. I've actually I had a 1.5 hour commute to community college myself. That is not fun.
That sounds
Thanks for listening.
Wow.
I recently dusted off my PS2 and started playing X-Men's Legends 1 and 2 again. These games have been two of my favorite games of that generation. Thinking of the nostalgia, I started wondering, with the new Avengers movie coming out next month, will there be any good superhero games in the nearby future? What were are your favorite superhero games, or do you prefer Marvel or DC? Beyond, and thank you from Imuden in the Netherlands.
I was thinking about this the other day. It's really odd that we're not getting movie licensed games like we used to. We used to just get bad ones. Mm-hmm. And now we get none.
Yeah.
It's weird. Well, like, the Dark Knight. No, Dark Knight Returns didn't get a game. It got an iOS game. That's insane to me.
That's what we get now.
Yeah. On Super Nintendo, we would have gotten 100 games. Like, there would have been a Genesis game that had its own set of levels. Like, there would have been a bad PS1 game. It would have been a one-on-one fighting game in the Mortal Kombat engine or something. We don't even get those anymore.
Yeah, it weirds me out. There were no console Avengers games, no console Hunger Games games, no console Twilight games. Like, all of that is just super weird to me. Like,
what did you want for Twilight? Like, a simulator where you kiss a wolf?
I want Twilight Baseball. Have you seen that movie?
When they play baseball?
Have you seen that movie when the vampires play baseball and it's really weird and cringeworthy and embarrassing? Mm-hmm. All the vampires are really strong and fast, so they're just, like, basically playing Dragon Ball Z baseball, but looking all sexy and
awful.
Yeah,
they listen to Paramore while they do it.
It's a really funny scene, and it would make a great, terrible video game to play.
Yeah. I want a Twilight game that's like Buster Bust Loose, where everything's just a little bit – every level's a little different. Remember that game?
Yeah.
The Tiny Toons game?
It bums me out that the last
– weird demand. I have a place for people like you. It's called Craigslist.
You should call it – it's called a loony bin.
On there.
No, it bums me out that the last few Spider-Man games haven't been phenomenal, because I feel like
Maybe, was so good.
Maybe it was kind of smoke and mirrors, but on the PS2 back then, I kind of liked. I think it was Spider-Man 2.
Spider-Man 2 was awesome.
Yeah, which was it was, and it was just like it was. I love New York City, and I love being able to fly around that city. Even though there were parts where you can go over the river and just start shooting webs in the air, and they didn't connect to anything. It was like, I'm flying. Yeah,
they were just planes. And, I mean, you know, just in the right.
Yeah, there's always just helicopters waiting for you. I think that's actually how they explain that. And then they sort of like. They kept trying it and trying and trying it, and it was kind of like – it went on the same kind of arc as like the Tony Hawk games where they were just like
– Well, that was Activision.
It was the same time, and they just lost a little something each time. So I'd love to see that come back. We're getting a new Batman game, but I don't think it has anything to do with the film. I don't think anyone's expecting it to.
Yeah, but those are – as far as superhero games go, like, that's the best thing we have going for us right now, which is weird because, like, DC in the movie realm obviously is way far behind Marvel.
So, yeah, that's definitely true. DC is not on – like, the Marvel versus DC, like, competition right now is fascinating because, like, I would say that DC is doing way better with animated movies, with video games – close draw, but I would say DC is doing better with toys and collectibles.
Okay. What about TV? It's like Gotham versus Daredevil.
They definitely have the edge there, I think. But it's really? Like, it's, I don't know. I mean, they're not, their stuff isn't connected, you know? Like, I think the Daredevil was kind of a huge, the difference is like DC's like, here's The Flash and Arrow and Gotham City. These are some of our, like, big properties that we're putting on, like, CBS and the WB. The WB. I'm still going to call it that. I remember
CW. Remember that frog? Remember that WB frog?
I will never forget that
frog.
He
made me uncomfortable.
That was a great frog. Anyway, they're doing that. Meanwhile, like, Marvel's like, we've got Agent Carter and, like, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, it's kind of – it's they're not putting their best foot forward on TV because they're like – we'd rather save that for the movies, you know?
Yeah. Why isn't there a Flash movie? Daredevil was definitely their baby steps for that, of being like, we have a guy and he's going to address the something bad happened in New York once in the Avengers film, but we'll walk around that hole.
Really bad. Watched that first episode and they referred to the incident, and I for 20 minutes I thought they were talking about 9/11.
Yeah.
Well, until I brought it up and they were like, the person I was watching was like, no, they're referring to the Battle of New York. I was like,
A hole in the sky above Times Square opened and aliens flew into it. Like, I think that would probably get a little bit, it would be a little bit more of a thing people get a fuss about than 9/11, you know?
Well, that
not
was
to
a big
discount 9/11, but yeah, that would be definitely fresh in everyone's mind.
Yeah.
Anyway, on to video games. Yeah, I think that Arkham Knight, like, DC is like doing awesome stuff there. Mm-hmm. They also had, I mean, Injustice was fabulous. It was a fantastic game.
Totally.
They had that MOBA. They had DC. They've got
Infinite Crisis.
Yeah. They got DCUO.
Yeah.
Marvel, meanwhile, they've got Marvel Heroes, which is kind of like Diablo with free to play Marvel superheroes.
Yep.
I haven't actually ever bothered checking it out, but I like the idea of it. But at the same time, it's like, I do miss that like large scale stuff. Like,
yeah.
Yep.
The Activision did the Deadpool game, which was surprisingly fun.
Mm-hmm.
That could have been.
Oh yeah, that's right. That was pretty good.
Should have been way worse than it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. It could have been better, but it should have been way worse. You're totally right.
I heard a rumor. Totally, like, this is, I don't know, this is like somebody muttered this to me at a party or something, but I heard that this was like, they cut about half of that game.
I know they cut like half the dialogue in that game, because a lot of it was ad-libbed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Nolan North told us that.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
That he would go in there and they would just be like, here's what you have to do, like, here's your vegetables, now your dessert's on you, and he would just basically make stuff up.
That's
and
awesome.
They were like, that's great. We're keeping that, or we're cutting that. Yeah. Or
that was a surprisingly fun game. That was, but then, I mean, Activision's got Spider-Man, and they just kind of like, I think a lot of it has to do with just, do they really want to take the chance of throwing like millions of dollars at a licensed property when they could just sort of like, they can just do the iPhone stuff, you know?
Yeah. I get the impression that Disney is gearing up and sort of starting something big, and they realize how much money they make off the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and they realize they could tap into the video game market as well, like outside of stuff like Disney Infinity with the Marvel sets. And I think they're going to be creating some sort of an internal gaming division where we're like, hey, we are going to take control of these properties ourselves, and we're going to make sure we're not going to dilute the brands by having Avengers game come out
In the meantime, they've got Disney Infinity to
Totally.
It's smart. I remember I went to go see The Matrix Reloaded or whatever, and I ran home and I bought Enter the Matrix.
Yeah.
It was a bad game, but I had a good time playing it because I was just like, I don't want to go back to that movie theater and see that same thing again, but I love that universe. In the same way, I spent the weekend celebrating Star Wars, and I came home and I'm like, what Star Wars games can I play right now? Like, what Star Wars movies should I watch right now? What merchandise should I buy? Like, I got bit by that bug, and now it's inside me until Christmas. And when that happens, more babies will be planted inside from that same bug.
What's happening?
And then I'll burst into flames. Spiders will crawl out of my mouth. But it sucks that if I go see Batman, I went to see the last Batman movie, Dark Knight Returns, and I was like, what do I have to play? An iOS game where I have to control it with like swipes and taps. Like, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
Why isn't this on consoles? Why am I not running around like a full Batman game based on this movie? Mm-hmm. Like, why can't I punch Bane on my PS3?
Yeah.
It's stupid. So I hope everyone understands that this is all these parts of the world have to come together.
I think the coolest thing that Marvel could do with what they've got going on is have a game that's just a game, you know?
Yeah.
Like have one of their properties that they're like, here's one, we are breaking this out. It's not based on a movie, but it's like maybe that's somebody that if it's popular enough gets their own movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's kind of sort of what's happening with Deadpool, but that's all kind of Fox has got the rights to that. I think that, you know, having I don't know what character they would do that with, you know, because they're kind of really just pulling from all over.
Yeah.
But like, it'd be really cool to have somebody like, I keep thinking like Iron Fist, you know, like kind of like a deeper cut, but really just build the game around the character as opposed to trying to just shoehorn somebody into a game.
Yeah,
and be
definitely.
Like, here's the thing. Yeah. I play a Power Pack game. Yeah. That's what I'd do.
Yeah. Also, if you should check out, we'll put it in the show notes. We just posted a feature, like eight of us, a group feature on what we'd like our sort of dream Avengers game to be. I said a Telltale game.
Yeah.
So that's what I say about everything.
Wow.
I said, like, I want to tell like the Civil War storyline through just dialogue choices.
Avengers game where you can't hit anybody.
Yeah.
And actually feel like you hit them.
Yeah.
That sounds terrible, Marty. The worst part of Avengers when they talk to each other.
That's the best part
of
the Avengers.
I like when they hit each other.
No, I like when there's banter. It's like an episode of Gilmore Girls.
My favorite kind of banter is the kind where there's a slight pause between each person talking, you know?
Yeah.
You got to spin a small wheel around. All right.
You're an animal.
Beyond, this announcement of a new Deus Ex game has brought to mind a question that I don't think I've heard anyone speaking about. Deus Ex Human Revolution ended with giving the player a choice about how the future of that world would take shape. In the new game, the devs have chosen which of those endings is canon and have thrown out the other ending. Other games have done this recently as well, such as Infamous Second Son and Star Wars The Old Republic. What do you think of this phenomenon? Personally, I think it sucks. Thanks, London.
Yeah, I think it sucks too. I'm totally with you on that. I hate the split canon crap that comes from giving players the illusion of choice
in video games. Like, it's why, and I won't spoil a thing here, but it's why I absolutely love The Last of Us, because it ends with them just being like, here's our ending. You can't go back and get a good or a bad or a different one. There are no moral choices that you can alter here. It's just what it is. So if they ever make a sequel to that game, it'll pick up with where the writers left off and not where I left off.
Or not where, because that's like what London's referring to is like, I completely agree with that, where it's like, this is my ending to the game. And then a sequel comes out and we're like, well, no, actually, this was the real ending. You got the fake ending.
Which is exactly what they did with Infamous.
Yeah.
You know, and especially the last one had the same thing, where it was just, if you play good or bad, like a character lives or dies. And if they do a sequel to that story, they're like, hey, Delson's back and he's hanging out in Seattle again and he's got to go fight some guys that love coffee.
But he ended up the – is that what Seattle's all about?
Yeah, totally. It's just
sad people with guitars. And
pretty much.
Yeah.
I don't know which version of it's going to pick up. And it's going to have to be like you're walking in to play it and it's going to be like, are you bad? Were you bad? Are you a bad boy? And you're like, yeah. And like, here's the bad ending. Yep. Uh-oh. It starts off at a funeral.
Again, let's start off with the question, are you a bad boy?
Yeah. Who's a bad – are you a good boy? Who's a good boy? Do you want the good ending?
I just want a game that's called Are You a Bad Boy?
Yeah.
Those bad dudes have grown up. They are bad boys now.
Wait a minute. Is that what happens when you grow up?
That's actually a prequel.
Yeah. Yeah, so
– But yeah,
I don't know. I guess I'm with you on that. I think the – I think it stems from this – your actions having an effect in games, you know, like that's sort of always been like, there's kind of a, that good ending, bad ending mentality has always been like one of those things in games that I really loved, you know, like the fact that it's like, which one did you get? What happened? Did you give into Revolver Ocelot's, you know, interrogation? Mm-hmm. Oh, you should try it again. Cause you got to do this differently. Cause this thing happens. Mm-hmm. Or like, you know, you play any fighting game, everyone's got a different ending, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that I like, I can get with that, but it's not like Johnny Cage gets a different ending in Mortal Kombat if he only punches people in the dick the entire time. And they're just like, man, this guy is really weird.
you get the Shao Kahn, he's just like, you can take it, but you're just like,
can you just not do that? That's so weird.
Like, I realize the creator.
You're a great fighter, but you're sick in the head.
I like that he created this tournament in another world. He's like, this is too weird for me, dude. Like, you're just. Yeah, you took this to a different level.
I really like your acting films, but this is just gross. You gotta stop doing that. No, I get that. I get the multiple endings thing. I guess it's always like, I remember playing a game, True Crime, right? It was that game that became the Sleeping Dogs, Streets of LA, or whatever.
Isn't there just like a dragon at the end or something?
Well, it doesn't make any sense at all. But you play a cop, and if you want to be a corrupt cop or not, you can play a cop.
Yeah.
But it's basically there's this wheel that goes left to bad and right to good, but you're always just kind of fluttering around in the middle because you're kind of like, I'm a good cop. I'm going to save this guy. Also, I can't drive, so I killed three people by accident. So don't tell the force, but I'm mostly a good dude, so I'm going to get a good ending. And during my good ending, I'm sitting there going, yeah, I killed a lot of people by accident, and I'm a cop.
Yeah.
So you never really like, even when I play Infamous, it's just like, oh, man, you helped a lot of people, but you killed five?
Yeah.
But you saved seven.
Yeah.
What a good boy.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that.
Who's a bad boy?
Yeah,
not you.
It never works like that. It's like trying to play GTA like you're a normal upstanding citizen. You wait at the lights and stuff. That's like eventually you're just going to be like, and snap and kill drive over somebody.
Yeah. People also do get mad about like when something doesn't have replay value.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like that's one of those things you have to compromise. Like I'm really torn on this, actually. Like, I don't know. I don't think it sucks. I'm actually really a huge proponent of developers like being like, we want to do this thing, like because we want to, because this is the thing we are inspired by.
Yeah,
like, we want to follow this route. You know, maybe they had some focus group study that was like, this many people chose this answer, and people just voted on the plot for the next game.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I don't know that, but that's also kind of interesting because it's trying to make the game that most people want based on how they played the first game. You know,
which does happen a lot with movies, right? With like they'll show a movie to a bunch of test audiences and they'll be like, that ending was terrible. And they'll be like, okay, we're going to rewrite the entire thing. Sorry.
Yeah.
But with video games, I keep saying The Last of Us. Like, I don't think anyone – I've never heard anyone go like, The Last of Us sucks because it doesn't have good replay value.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't need
it. No one
says
that.
You know, it was like 15 hours long and the ending was amazing.
Yeah.
Deal with it.
Yeah.
Anyway, speaking of endings, it is now the time for the ending of the show. Before we go, we got a few of the new games that will be coming out for your PlayStation machines.
Did you say nude games?
The nude, all live, hot nude games. You can play them with your, PlayStation. Assassin's Creed Chronicle China is coming to PS4 Digital. Yeah. That is that cool one where it's a side scroll. That could go so well, but those things can also go so wrong.
Yeah.
I'm so curious. How do we find out?
The game, Vince Ingenito is reviewing the game. The review may or may not be up by the time
you
listen to this. I'm not. No, I previewed the game and then I'm reviewing Broken Age now, so I couldn't.
Got it. Yeah, because you've been doing our Assassin's Creed stuff for a while.
Yeah, for the last couple of years. Yeah. I played a couple hours of the game. I like it. It plays a lot like Mark of the Ninja. I don't like it quite as much as Mark of the Ninja, which isn't.
Yeah,
super bad because Mark of the Ninja is incredible.
Yeah,
sure.
But definitely, like, if you like this series, especially now, it's sort of a slow time.
It feels very Prince of Persia. I'm into it.
Feels very Prince of Persia. The future installments seem interesting. Yeah. All the third one, you are a Russian during the Bolshevik Revolution.
Speaking of Russian, you're gonna be rushing through some stuff in Infinity Runner, which is coming to PS4.
That was
get this
decent.
It's a clever thing they're doing. The Infinity is the largest spaceship ever built by mankind. So it's not an infinite runner. You're just running through something called the Infinity. However, there's a werewolf on it or something.
What?
Yeah, I don't know. I think you get chased by something. Yeah, it looks like there's a werewolf in the picture. All right. Here's one coming out. It's called LA Cops.
Uh-oh.
All right. That's coming to PS4 digitally.
Yikes. really?
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Are you sure it's not a French thing like La Cops?
I think I saw this one actually. This one actually looks gorgeous. It's got this very kind of like 70s like sleazy art style.
Oh,
like,
okay.
The graphic here has a cup of coffee and a donut and a badge and a gun.
All right, I'm back in.
Oddworld Abe's Odyssey New and Tasty is coming to PS3. I believe that's a three-way cross-buy, so if you already bought it on PS4, you should maybe have access to it.
Yeah. Which I think a bunch of most of us got it for free a couple months ago.
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
There
you go.
I'm
not sure if that carries over. I'm curious.
What about Shovel Knight?
Shovel Knight's coming out.
Alphabet.
Which damn turn? We got to talk about Sayonara Umihara Kawase Plus, which is completely reworked.
We had to talk about that before Shovel Knight. Are you kidding me?
It's about a really super sexy 20-year-old backpacking Japanese sushi chef armed with a fishing rod. And she's real scandalous on all the art, but it's like a cute little platformer where she's just like a little cartoon. Like it's always weird when they do that. Where they're like, here's the sexiest character on the cover, and you play the game, and you're like, this looks like Gex. What am I doing? All right, and then of course there's Shovel Knight coming to PS4, PS3, and Vita. It is digital three-way cross-buy, and it is a game that was almost game of the year last year.
This is exciting. Cross-buy. It's cross-save. Kratos is in it.
Yeah.
You get, and then there's a bunch of DLC down the line that's going to be free.
Yeah, which I played at PAX.
The Plague Knight.
And it's awesome. You're probably, people looking at this game, this is what I hate. People look at games like this and they go, oh, it's really simple and it's really basic because it's got this 8-bit art style. Mm-hmm. This is one of the.
Maybe they're basic.
Yeah, they are basic. This is actually one of the more deep platforming games I've ever played.
Yeah.
It's got like this kind of. Minor RPG system to it. It's got great nods to Mega Man, Super Mario 3, DuckTales, tons of classic games. And I feel like it really holds up on its own, too. And the DLC is great. The DLC legitimately lets you play as one of the bosses, and it legitimately changes the way the entire game plays.
So
like, it feels like you're playing a... It's like going from one NES platformer game to another by switching these characters.
What I didn't know is that Plague Knight's only the first of three free DLCs.
Ooh.
That King Knight's getting his own DLC, and Spectre Knight's getting his own DLC.
What about
also,
Wayne Knight?
Wayne. He got bit by that raptor. Got stuff right.
You guys can take that, run with it. Yacht Club Games, that's for free.
They're also doing a gender swap mode, which is kind of cool. So Shovel Knight becomes a girl, and Shovel Knight becomes a boy. I think that's cool.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
All right, so there you go. There are your games for this week. Go play them, and if you want to, you two have not been doing your book club reading. If you missed
Bono.
We are doing a book club thing where we play games that are still free PlayStation Plus games. One of them is Monster Bag for the PlayStation Vita, and the other one is...
Asura's Awakening.
Sorry, not Asura's Wrath. You don't have to play that if you don't want to. But you do have to play Asura's Awakening. That's out for PS3 and PS4 and should be free if you're a PlayStation Plus member. We're all going to play it and talk about it.
We're going to do
next
it.
Time, I'll make you dummies play the game.
Fine.
As always, I'm Max Scoville. Brian Altano is Agent Bizzle on Twitter. Marty is McBiggity.
Yes.
Thank you all for watching / listening. May the Fuars be with you.
Fuars.
Beyond.
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 Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about.
I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's H-Y-P-E-R-T-H-E-T-I-C-A-L.